Yakuza. Yakuza. Yakuza Kick Radio.
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 The Yakuza Kick Radio.
This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio. Tremont says so. Who wants some?
God help us.
Jesus!
God and baby.
Jesus!
Help us.
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Havoc, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah, Yakuza Kick radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
Your company that comes on Thursday nights at 9 o'clock.
Shut up.
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you motherfuckers.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
The shit is bananas.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
This is Greg Excellent, Bearded Dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. If you're not, probably watching porn and you have this muted. You should be listening to it, Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope on that cowboy, guys.
All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that doc, you homie. Fuck that. Black D. Oh.
This is bullshit, man. Motherfucker.
Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you. Who's next?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J. Cat Morris.
You are now listening to
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J. Cat Morris. We're back with another one. This one is Sanctioned in Blood. From September 28th, 2002, and I am joined by my co-host, Stan. What's going on, bro?
Hey, what's going on, Jay? Back to back to back. We're just running these out left and right. Playing hurt today a little bit, a little under the weather, but ready to go. And sometimes you just got to lace up the boots and keep going with it, right?
Yeah, man. We got another Delaware show. We are, like you said, going through them pretty fast. And, you know, Cage of Death's right around the corner. I mean, that's definitely exciting within itself. We've got another massive show coming up after this as well. We got a couple left. And a couple of those are pretty big ones. So, exciting.
Yeah. And, you know, this is another version of a spot show. But this one's the best of the quote-unquote spot shows that we've seen.
Yeah, I mean, the matchups were, you know, pretty well done, as we kind of, you know, teased last time. You know, they had a lot of, you know, GQ, Cashmere, Mondo, Trent, Gage, Payne. Like, that's, I mean, just hearing the matchups, you go, okay, well, that can't be terrible. So I think that was part of it, just going in. They were like, let's book something that's really kind of pretty straightforward to pull off.
Yeah, and not a ton of fuck finishes. So yeah, let's before we get into it, I do want to just give some information that I was able to dig up. It was actually not too hard to dig up, but the thumb thieves are still on the loose. So
okay, wow.
Never solved. The only thing that really comes from it, Vice, when they were doing some of the different dark sides of the ring, I guess started to try to ask Rob Black and some others for some information. They got nothing. America's Most Wanted got nothing. In fact, Rob Black apparently slammed the door and locked the door on reporters or people questioning, however you want to look at that. Him, he's come out and said he thinks it was all publicity and had nothing to do with him, and that Messiah just used it to try to fuel ticket sales. Messiah said that it was two guys in their mid-20s, and that he thought it was his roommates when they came in, even as he said, hey, what's up? And they answered, you know, one of them answered back. He didn't realize until he seen them in the reflection of the TV, and then they locked the door, and that's when he realized something was wrong. They cut it off with garden shears.
Yeah, I didn't remember that part. Yeah. Wild.
So, yeah, so that's the general story. They hit them with garden shears, a chair, and an aquarium. So that is what they hit him with. And then he was able to break free as they were trying to get his belt off. He doesn't know what they were going to try to cut off, taking off his belt. But I think we can all figure that out.
Yeah, that was the plan, apparently. But, yeah, so that's that. If anyone wants to go get some vigilante bounty hunting, you know, done this weekend, they can go get the guys who got Messiah's thumb. Zandig's out. He let you know a lot. This is his show. I'm sure he felt very good getting back to that kind of talk because he let us know a lot that this is a Zandig sanctioned show, which, I mean, it does come into play later. So it does make sense that he is laying that in heavily.
Yeah. Yeah. Card subject to change. He's got a shoulder. Rose wheels out Flash, who has tubes, and he's in a wheelchair. Z-Bar comes in from behind. That doesn't work out well for him, but we'll see later. Z-Bar holds his own against two guys, but cannot take down the master, John Zandig, here. Zandig hits Z-Bar with a discus clothesline that they're calling a 760, 730, something like that. 720. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the numbers were. The Rachis are in the ring. They hit Zandig with some tubes. Hatred and Wife Beater make the save, and we got the match set up for the main event.
Yep. Yeah, it's going to be Wife Beater and Nate Hatred versus the Rachis and Z-Bar.
Yeah. So a 3-on-2 match, kind of.
Yeah. Yep. And so that sets us off to the first match being Dahmer and Corey Castle versus Rick Feinberg and the Hurricane Kid.
Yeah. So this match was interesting to me because Doomsday does most of the Dahmer does most of the work here throughout. But I did like the Hurricane and Feinberg. They get Doomsday style leg drop. That's where Doomsday came from. Off the top rope. And then really it's just Dahmer tossing people around for a little bit. And then Dahmer takes his own partner, Castle, and power bombs him on Feinberg for the 3 count, which I didn't quite understand. I don't know if you got more out of this match, but this one was kind of quick and to the point.
Yeah, not a whole lot. I like that Arabian leg drop, they called it, from Hurricane Kid. Because it was like, you know, your Arabian moonsault, but he got a twist out of that same, normal springboard. And I thought that was cool, you know, pretty creative out of him. The Sano is just over every time for me. I don't give a fuck when he does it, who he does it to. That Sano suplex every time. I'm just like, and there's that. I mean, I got to write it down. It's always on his, it just looks great. You get the German on Feinberg. And then, yeah, Dahmer powerbombs Corey on Feinberg for the win. And that's where we're at.
Yeah, it was quick. It was to the point. You know, I don't know if I'd be happy being, my partner powerbombing me on somebody else, but, they get the 3 count and, we're out of there and right into the next match.
Yeah. I just can't, you know, I can't help but keep thinking, you know, every time it's this new thing with Dahmer and a bunch of just wild situations. It's like, what were they really planning on doing anyway? Because it clearly wasn't this, you know. Dahmer just got put into different situations because what were they going to do, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if they should have made him a singles guy for a little bit. I don't know if that's just not his thing. I know he, you know, obviously is one of the coaches or trainers at the CZW school. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's a matter of you don't want to take his money away because Fast Eddie decided he was going to leave the organization quickly, as they said on commentating. So I don't know that you want to take his money away by not booking him anymore.
No,
not fair to him. But yeah, he's just kind of with random people. So I don't know why they didn't just go to a singles run for him, but this is what they did. Hopefully eventually he catches on with something.
Yeah, it's tough because you'll see for a while they kind of give him flashes at times, but for the most part, he stays around wherever his current set of students are. And he's just like within those early matches, and it's entertaining. It's Dahmer being Dahmer, but it's almost as like he just kind of reserved himself back to a role where it's like, I'm going to help this new class come into the scene. And then from there, whatever happens, and I'll, you know, I don't know. That's just the way it always looked from my standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah. So next we got a really, you know, super, I mean, anticipated match with Nick Burke versus Ian Knox. You know, I mean, how we look forward to the Nick Burke matches. Always talking about it. And so we get a run on the outside for just no fucking reason at all, because a whole lot of bullshit happened beforehand. And just like this, like I could have died off of a Rana on the outside of the ring with like the street involved. I mean, I don't know what the hell that was for, but definitely worth mentioning because, you know, we get a big back suplex on Burke and it's a draw. So,
yeah. So, test of strength to start. Knox, big gorilla press, the Burke Hurricanrana on the outside. Burke hits that somersault leg drop that I like, split legged moonsault. Knox hits a nice knee to the face into a double underhook lifted DDT. I guess we'll call it that, because he almost gets some kind of vertical on the DDT, which is nice. They call that the 2 a.m. Knox hits the off switch off the top rope. At this point, Rory and Laura Lyle were at the Yale game with their parent, with Laura Lyle's parents, and they were playing Harvard, and they were, oh, wait, sorry, that's what my wife was watching, because I can't get distracted by Gilmore Girls. Burke wins. Wait, nope. Both win, and we have a double pin. I think they were trying to go for five more minutes, because then Knox decides he's going to hit him with, the, you know, a drunk driver or whatever the move is. But they didn't, and yeah. So that happened.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. So we got GQ versus Kashmir. This one, to me, didn't come together the way that I thought it should have. I thought it had potential, you know, just even on paper matchup. And, you know, we got some good things here. We got that airplane spin movie's got.
Burning hammer.
Yeah. Oh, a burning hammer is like what Moff does, where he drops them on his head, you know?
It's like an F5 kind of coming off,
yeah, the airplane. Yeah, everyone just kind of spins them, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like release airplane spin, I guess. Yeah. But a few spots, like I said, this just don't go well. And then we get the frogs. What does he call that? The frogton on the chair.
Yep.
Yep.
So we get the that. One thing I have here is GQU looks jacked up, and you can really see the difference from a year ago when he came out. Like you can see the size that he's gained over the course of the year. Get a bulldog on the chair. Swanton, like you said. You know, I thought maybe, like I said, I was a little under the weather, and I thought maybe I just couldn't keep the concentration as I was getting a nice little cup of tea and some medicine during this match. The wife was bringing that over, and but I'm happy you said that this wasn't what was expected, because when I looked back down at the notes, damn, did I miss a whole bunch of this match? Because I didn't have a ton here.
Yeah, I mean, I saw some, you know, again, GQ gets speared off the chair. I thought that was pretty good. And then you get the bat to the chair for the win by Kashmir. But no, like I was kind of like looking forward to this, like, all right, we'll see what goes on with this. Cause I know, you know, GQ is real good for his, like, just barely coming into CZW, you know, and Johnny works a very similar style, you know, could do a bunch of things. And I figure, you know, let's see how this goes. And you could see they started to build towards something, but then the move kind of fell apart, so they'd patch in what they could. But that happened too many times, and it just looked like the match just didn't gel, unfortunately.
Yeah, no chemistry, no flow to it.
Not the specific one.
Yeah, like I said, I'm happy you said that because I thought I didn't give it enough concentration, but apparently it was just, you know, it wasn't their best outing between the two of them.
No. So then we got Cash versus Ruckus versus Sanjay in a three-way ladder match.
Yeah. I like how Cash ain't having the fast start. He's like, yeah, I'm just going to go out and watch. He even says it. You guys do that shit, I'll be over here watching. I did like the way Cash did that. And then he comes in and all the flipping starts. He sits on the ladder, and then as Dutt and Ruckus are doing what they do, Cash dives in and gets caught. So I like the way they did that here to change it up a little bit.
Yeah, it was good. Cash waiting on the ladder, showing a little bit of arrogance still, and you know, letting them just work, because those guys were feuding and they're kind of, you know, what's this guy involved in the match for at the beginning of the match? They're selling that to begin with. So now he's in the match and he's like, yeah, what the fuck you want me in the match for? And then, you know, he's going to get involved in his way. But Sanjay and Ruckus had history, so it made sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And I thought tonight had a lot of good storytelling throughout the matches. So this was kind of the first one, but I thought that was really good. We go to the outside, Cash leaves and goes and gets a barbed wire ladder, sets it up on the outside, up against the railing. And then Ruckus was building some kind of ladder structure. And Sanjay on the ladder, kind of holding on to it like he's going to do a drop kick. But Ruckus pulls him off and into the Parker as Sanjay flips into it, which was really cool looking spot. I think they would both say they wish they hit it a little bit, you know, smoother at the very end, but it was a cool looking spot.
Yeah. Before the ladder contraption, Sanjay doing that front hand spring off the top of the ladder into an attempted Rana. And like you say, like they probably wish the end, you know, came off a little smoother, but also who the fuck attempts a front hand spring off the top of the fucking ladder into the next move you're going to do? Like, you know what I mean? That's like, the ladder budges at all when you're pushing off with your hands. You know, this is not a normal thing. Like, they made it look pretty normal because Sanjay is just like superhuman at this point. But I mean, a front handspring off the top of the ladder is weird shit, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. And he does it like there's, yeah, no, nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. Who does it? Sanjay. But yeah, he shows these flashes of just amazing ability, you know, to me right up there with Amazing Red and even M-Dog 2020 and Ruckus, right? I think he can do all the same stuff and some of it better. Ruckus is impressive because of the size, but, you know, Sanjay with those other three, I think he's able to pull off all the same stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely that ladder contraption, you said, it set up a lot of possibilities for them to use it as kind of a jungle gym as they wrestled. So I thought that was a pretty cool idea. You get the double standing star press. And then, like you said, that chronic, I think always looks good. As long as you get a guy that could, you know, sell it the way a Sanjay can, it's a great looking move.
Yeah. And then Cash goes from Eureka to Edgewater on Ruckus. Over those ladders as well. And then the top of the ladder, Cash is on top. He gets kind of crotched on top of the ladder, but then gets pushed into the turnbuckle. And I thought that looked fantastic. And again, something unique. You've seen people go into the ropes before, but not into the turnbuckle. So I thought that looked really, really cool. And, you know, something that could be moved onto a TV match pretty easily. Cause it's not, I mean, listen, anytime you're coming off a ladder, it's gotta be, you know, scary and dangerous. Don't, you know, get me wrong, but that looked as safe as you can get, as long as you have the distance right. And they did here, and it looked really, really good.
Yeah. Yeah. And then speaking of coming off the ladder, I mean, the finish is the Cash flow off the ladder. And I mean, that's just a rough move.
Yeah. Cash flow off the ladder on Dutt. Cash wins. Then he gets a little too cocky or overconfident. tries to fight with them a little bit more, gets caught as he goes to do a springboard something, gets caught and tossed into the barbed wire ladder that's up against the guardrail, and that looked like it hurt like hell because, you know, blind fall into the guardrail, into that ladder, and that's a Mondo-type bump.
Yeah, and, you know, it was like he brought in that ladder, and I thought towards the end of the match, I was like, did I miss the spot where they used the barbed wire ladder? And then you see that after the match, and it's like, oh, he brought that in so he could take one more crazy-ass, like, Mondo bump at the end. And it's like, yeah, and you saw that, though. You saw the building of Chris Cash trying to be just one of those CZW guys. His energy was always there, like, from the first match he showed up. You could see the daredevil side of things, him just willing to do all of this crazy, innovative, just psychotic, you know, moves from all heights and this and that. So he was really trying to really push it constantly to show that he belonged.
Yeah. And this is the first, you know, I think this is the first big Cash bump that we see, but there's been a, you know, a bunch of off the top rope stuff, don't get me wrong, but into the ladder, into, you know, whether the barbed wire is there or not, into the ladder, into the guardrail backwards like that. So it's the first one that we see that he starts to get quote unquote ultra violent.
Yeah, for sure. So then we got Trent versus Mondo.
Yeah, Assert's a wizard. The title's not on the line. And he's also grown 3 inches. So he's now coming from Philly, Japan at 12 and a half inches. I still don't understand what that's referencing, but I do know he went from 9.5 to 12 and a half.
Right. So, yeah, Mondo gets thrown to the outside. And he starts – at some point he starts bleeding from the head, and it's not like in a normal way. So I'm not really sure what happened.
I went back and seen it on the running knee into the corner. Mondo sells his head back and catches the ring post. You see it. He as he goes to the ground, you see him check the back of his head. You don't see any blood yet, but then as soon as he's outside, it's bleeding down the side of his face. And I did the same thing. I'm like, well, that's not, you know, that's not where you normally bleed from. So, you know, like I said, I rewound and went back and said, match is only, you know, 30 seconds in, so it's got to be somewhere in here. And that's what it was. And then the chair on top of that right afterwards, I was like, that's got to suck, right? You just smacked your head, cut yourself open on the ring post. And now you're taking the chair right afterwards. And then we get the Mondo springboard leg drop. So,
yeah. Yeah, the reverse driver on Trent through the chair, I thought was wild. And then the acid tumbleweed hit real well for sure. The M. Bison through the chair, you know, again, this I think was one of the better one of the better M. Bisons. You know, we get times where it applies and it looks like, you know, you try to kind of touch him on the way by, you know, with a little hop. But other times it's like, oh, this works, you know, and this is definitely one of them.
Yeah, we had a time warp in here for me. With a Steve Young reference right before Acid hit the Blue Thunder Driver, talking about how Steve Young, you know, trying to get over the hump. A little while later, we get a Tom Brady reference.
Yeah, he must have been deep in the NFL at this moment because, the Tom Brady reference was funny later, too, because they were talking about it like just an amazing feat that no one expected. So, obviously, this is the beginning of Brady's run. Because like by the end you're like fucking of course he won it again. This is what he does. Fucking fuck's sake.
You know, like, yeah, this and I'd have to go look, but this might have been when Bledsoe got hurt and he led the comeback. So because again this is September, so it's not like we're talking about, you know, the Super Bowl yet.
October. Yeah.
This might have been when Brady got his first run after Bledsoe got hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, wild. But, just that wild time, like you said, time warp. You start hearing things, you're like, wow, he's talking about Brady like an up-and-comer. Like, this kid's got it. Like that young Tom Brady kid in the – oh, shit. You know, but, yeah.
Yeah. It's a whole year later, so interesting. Bledsoe was injured on September 23rd. And that's when Tom Brady, September 23rd, 2001. So a whole year later. So maybe he did win the Super Bowl that year. But anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, his comment makes sense that Tom Brady came out of nowhere and went and won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But we're still talking about one Super Bowl and Tom Brady.
Yeah, and not...
that's why, to me, it sounded insane. Like, oh, that lucky kid won the Super Bowl. Anyone could do it, like Barr. And it's like, this is not the same thing.
I'm sorry.
This is just not the same thing. We're not seeing an early Tom Brady of deathmatch wrestling in Z-Bar. And I'll give him all the credit he deserves for this match, believe me. But this does not show the early upcoming stages of the greatest deathmatch wrestler to play the deathmatch sport.
Okay, I'll give you that. Maybe not the greatest, but, you know, on the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I don't know how much carving you plan on doing, but it ain't four heads if that's what you're doing. We get the table on the corner. You get the Yakuza on Mondo. Trent hits that gourd buster off the table. And then we get the assault driver to Acid off the table to the chairs. That's wild. And then, you know, Cashmere comes wild in.
It's wild, and it looked rough, right? It looked, because the chairs didn't all scatter, and, you know, Acid does a great job of selling, but, you know, just the way the chairs didn't scatter, it looked like a nasty, nasty fall, and two count on it. And like you said, then you got Cashmere coming in with the bat.
Yep, and Trent gets the Yakuza and the win after the distraction and bat interaction.
And like I said, I like this because these matches, the storytelling here was really good. This was, you know, Gargantuan really putting over that Lobo hasn't booked this match, and it took John Zandig to book this match, and the last time they wrestled was a full year ago in a one-on-one match, and so on and so forth. So, you know, you set up where you can bring it back anytime you want with Cashmere coming in, because there's still no end to that feud that's not a feud, right? So I really like the way they did this.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely kept, you know, laying that in there over the night, because it was going to be, you know, used in this next coming match, you know, Gage versus Payne. You know, Payne's the world champion, but... this is a John Zandig sanctioned show. This isn't a Lobo show. This isn't CZW by storyline. So, you know, Payne challenges Gage from the start to beat him in a wrestling match, no hardcore, any of that stuff. So they do a lot of that for a while, a lot of teases. And, you know, you see like the suplex tease sequence. And, you know, this is the thing where you start seeing, you're like, oh boy, here we go. Because, like, if we're really selling a suplex that heavily, we've seen what Gage and Payne do. So starts to go like, man, this is going to be a rough one. But the whole purpose of this thing was to set up more. So, you know, all good. You know, it starts to pick up. We get the back suplex by Gage. Gage hits the power bomb. And then you get Payne pushed off the rail into the chairs.
Yeah, one of the things that was also interesting, speaking of, you know, this is a Zandig promotion, they were at the same location for King of the Deathmatch, right?
TOD.
Same place? Yeah. Or Tournament of Death, sorry.
Yeah.
And there they had the ZZW banners all over the place, and just, you know, in the top of my head, they didn't have them all over here. So they played into that a lot. I don't think there was any CZW anything. I'd have to, you know, go back and look at the ring skirt was, but, you know, besides that, you know, they're still playing it as if this is not CZW. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I didn't notice that, but that, I mean, that makes a lot of sense if they did that on purpose. You know, obviously it's a tough call when it comes to the TOD, because you're hoping this turns into a big thing. You know, even amongst your storyline, you kind of want to pepper in, fucking, this is CZW and we do this shit, you know, but it's not really CZW. It's really Zandig's thing, you know, and they want to kind of build off of this thing while keeping their story alive. So they did their best to, like, play on both sides of that on TOD. but this is a different thing. So yeah, maybe they did purposely play it that way.
Yeah, the only thing that it was, and you can, you know, give whatever you want for the reasons, where the security was in CZW shirts. But again, yeah, you know, hey, how many security guys do you have that, you know, do wrestling, right? So they didn't realize, so they just wore what they wore. But besides that, I mean, it's a good job, again, of keeping this. This isn't CZW. This is Zandig Promotions.
Yeah. Yeah, so then we get Gage thrown into that chair contraption on the outside from the buckle. And then Payne throws salt in the eyes of Gage to stop the boot scrape. I thought that was a pretty creative and, you know, good counter there.
Yeah, so it was something that I thought of.
You don't believe in salt. But
okay. Yeah, no, he threw you know, he threw Splenda in there. Hey, listen. But has Gage ever given Payne the boot scrape?
I'm pretty sure. I mean,
well, we'll have to take a look for that.
In that last again, match, he didn't hit him with it.
I don't know. I'll have to go back.
I mean, yeah, I feel like he did, but
yeah, we'll have to go back and look, because again, that move looks like it hurts like hell. We'll have to see if he ever really hits him with it.
Yeah, I'm almost positive, and we got another match coming up, you know, on the next show, so I don't think you have to wait long.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see if he gets it. I like the Beal by Gage over the top rope here, right? It's not just kind of tossing him. It is tossing him, but it's like a full-on Beal over the top rope, which was pretty cool. You know, I don't even think Payne got a chance to grab onto the ropes at all. He just went up and over.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of chair setups with Dewey. There was a funny spot in commentary, for me at least, when you hear Gage over the, you know, the mic that's near the ring, right, the camera or whatever it is, yelling at Dewey, hurry the fuck up. And Gargantuan, clearly not knowing what Gage is saying because of how far away they're sitting, is like, it looks like Gage and Dewey are going over strategy. I'm like, that's fucking great. Just good timing. Made me laugh. And the move that you just talked about, where Gage goes off the top into the chairs. Now, the ending of that was great, but it was a little bit funky on the setup. So, again, these guys are good. I don't know when the CM Punk interview came out, but Gargantuan says a couple times, I don't care what people say, Payne can wrestle, Payne can go with anybody. So he's really laying that in as well.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely an immediate reaction that it was not good. And definitely, you know, whatever word came from back that way was, yeah, fuck that or whatever. And, you know, he's not coming back and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, there was just the vibe coming away from it. I don't know if he already had done interviews or that type of thing, but.
Yeah, so he puts it over that, you know, go back into the ring. And I actually marked down a backdrop. I thought the backdrop here was fantastic and probably a move that's not used enough. It just looks really good when you're tossing a guy that far in the air, and Gage, you know, gets up for it, and Payne gets him up and over, and it looked really good for a backdrop.
Yeah.
You know, again, I like the way Gage sold it. He kicked his legs a couple times in the air as he was coming over.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's always intense. I mean, these guys, like, you know, this isn't their best showing. They're obviously, you know, doing this to set up the next match that they're going to have at the arena. And, you know, they're doing this at a certain speed or whatever you'd like to call it, you know, not really giving you their full effort. But you're still getting bits of what Gage does and what Payne does, and especially what they do against each other, because you know they have that different level, that brother rivalry, whatever they got going on, where you could just tell when Payne and Gage are in there together, it's different.
Well, I think listen, it's a show in Delaware. The crowd is not the same crowd that would be there, you know, next show or previous show. And not even on that end, I think, you know, every match can't be a WrestleMania match, right? Like, otherwise, no match is a WrestleMania match. So I think, you know, this is a very good match. Again, You're right. I'm sure there's better ones, but this is a good match, and you can't say they didn't really try.
No. And that's why, like, it's hard to, you know, really put into words what I'm talking about. I'm not saying they phoned this in or took it, you know, easy, but in the same token, we know that they can go further, and that's why they even started the match out teasing the, hey, let's just wrestle, let's not do the hardcore, because that got them a certain amount of, you know, way through the match without involving that crazy stuff. They put in all sorts of crazy shit in here. We're pointing it out. So, but, you know, it's just, again, they're setting up something, and it is a spot show. You would work a certain way on a spot show. You wouldn't go, you know, above and beyond to the point where you drag yourself back to the arena show. Like, man, that spot show, I fucking had a 5-star match that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's what these are supposed to be. And it builds, right? Again, you're building. And that's what I think they do here is they build into what's going to be next.
End this here. Stan.
Now I can hear you. That's wild.
All right.
That was
Impressive. I wasn't sure whether I should end it or not. I'm not sure if I lost internet or what happened or if it glitched for a second, but yeah, I stopped hearing you and then all of a sudden here we are. So,
well, here we are. And I was just saying that we, and I don't know what was heard or not heard, but, you know, you're building up. It's the thing that we talked about a while ago now that we do, you know, 7 shows a week, it feels like. But you can't start with the steel cage match, right? You have to build up. And I know they've had battles before, but now you clearly are in a bigger arena. You've brought in a new audience. You have fake UTV, all these different things. So now you're rebuilding this kind of story. So, you know, this was a good match, and the story is the ending, which we'll get to in a minute. But you're not going to put, to your point, a 5-star match together as that first match. It just doesn't, you know, there's no need to do that. There's no need to put yourself through that. So you put together a solid match. You have the finish that we have. And, you know, next match, I don't know if it's the if it is the blow off, I probably with these two guys would try to get this to go to Cage of Death, but you also have the tag team belts in the picture here. So we'll see what they do. But I think they did a great job again, storytelling here, right? Another really good job of continuing or starting a story with this one in the new scope of CZW.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you get that inverted choke breaker, you know, so he hits the choke breaker on the stomach. And then he gets the regular choke breaker. Then we get Pain with the knees up on the frog splash. I know you don't like to see that. But then you get the Pain Thriller on Gage off of that. And, you know, Gage gets that pile driver off the ropes through that chair, flattens it, and gets the pin. Finds out it's a non-sanctioned match, which he had no idea about. So he had no feed to the commentary. He was nowhere near any of those guys that were yelling at all show. And it's... it's a surprise to him, and he wants revenge. He wants another match, so we are going to get that set at the arena on the next show, which is a great thing.
Well, we don't know yet, unless we look forward on IWTV. Great swerve here, right? Gage on the mic, October 12th, I want you there, and Gargantuan, but will Lobo promote it, right? Just a good line there. And again, I love this. I think this is fantastic. Gage even buries Johnny 2.5s because he goes, you say every time you want competition, I put my name in the fucking hat every time, and you pull out this guy and you pull out, I don't even know what that fucking guy's name, and then CM Punk, but so poor Johnny 2.5s can never get any love here.
Yeah, and still wild again. Johnny isn't the guy that was burying everybody on the internet or on, you know, interviews and stuff. So kind of wild that CM Punk is still being put over in CZW as a phenomenal challenger that, you know, he once had. But Billy Fives never stops catching shade on the commentary, on fucking promos. No. Like, they just bury him into, like, the distant future. They're like, just fuck bringing that guy in anywhere.
Yeah, so we get that, and I thought that was good. Gage does a good job on the mic here, you know. October 12th at CZW Arena, you know, throws the mic down. So we'll see if we get it.
Yeah, we'll see. So then we got Hatred and Wife Beater versus the Rachis and Bar.
Yeah. So Z-Bar's out. Out wrestling Hatred to start this match, which I thought was interesting, right? Z-Bar, they're giving him all kinds of burn. He's literally out wrestling Hatred throughout the first, you know, 3-4 minutes of this match, putting him in arm bars and submission hold this, submission hold that, reversing everything. And then finally Hatred gets the big belly to belly on Rose through the barbed wire boards, leg tubes on Rose. Rose done powders for a long time, so I don't know what happened there. Back of his head was bleeding from the barbed wire boards. And we'll get to the bad one later, but he's gone for a little bit, even for that.
So yeah, they did start it like you said, with Bar getting a whole lot of offense. Before they did that, they gave Hatred those big shoulder blocks to start the match. You know what I mean? So they showed like Hatred's who you think he is. It's not like Bar just gets immediate offense so they could show like, oh, look, he's better today. It showed like Hatred super strong, and then Bar just, he gets some, you know, some work in there with the arm drags and the, you know, arm bars. And, which made me start thinking like, why didn't he make like a bigger emphasis on arm bars? Cause he's like Bar. And then I don't know. I just got sidetracked cause started seeing a whole lot of that out of him, so it was like a rest period for my mind too, where I was just like, all right, well, not a lot exciting going on at the moment. But yeah, so like you said, Rose spears Nate into the board. Nate gets the German on the barbed wire board on Rose. Chair shots to Rose with the leg in the chair with the tubes, and they're just working that leg for a long time, and the announcer sold heavily. Everybody knows about his PCL injury, which, I mean, I don't know how fucking anybody would have known about his PCL injury, because, I mean, you got to know the anatomy, I think, to just be like, PCL, that's the PCL. Yep. Yeah, he'll be out for like a month, 6 weeks with the PCL. Like, who the fuck knows that? You know what I mean? But Gargiulo literally said his PCL, like, I don't know, 10 times out of nowhere. Like, he just learned the term. So this is what we're selling. And that's why I think when they attacked the leg, they said, well, he's got that PCL, and they sold him out of the match for a while.
Yeah. It's interesting, right? Cause I don't know when you started really hearing MCL, ACL, PCL, PCL, definitely not one you hear a lot.
You know, I feel like that's the least common out of the L's, right? The CL's?
Yeah, definitely the least common. You know, we got a situation in Cincinnati where Hubbard, who is, you know, probably their second best defender, the coaching staff decided that he was going to play tight end yesterday and caught a touchdown and wound up tearing his PCL. So he's most likely out for the season. So PCLs are a thing. And
I think McCaffrey hurt his PCL, and then they said, well, really, if, I mean, they made the championship game, which they won't, or the Super Bowl, which they, again, but, you know, he would be available then. So I guess it's not as bad as an ACL or an MCL. Cause you know, when those go out, like, it's like fucking 12 months or 15 months, you know, but this is a little bit of a smaller thing, but still a thing. I don't know who knows about it in 2002. And certainly this wasn't mentioned on commentary like last month when he had the sombrero on. So, and that was actually the same month, not even last month. So like he's selling this shit so heavily, like, yeah, we all know, how dare they attack that PCL? And you're like, I don't know that they know. I personally, I don't know that they know, but okay.
Yeah. And again, it's weird, you know, and maybe it's because we were younger or whatnot, but I don't remember all these ACL, MCLs, and PCLs back in the day. Like, you just hurt your knee. You didn't hurt, like, specific, you know, parts of the knee back in the day, at least what I can remember. You know, unless it's Gorilla Monsoon giving you some crazy made-up fucking body part.
Yeah, didn't fucking Mickey Mantle, like, tear his ACL before his career or something and then just play his whole fucking career?
He got his surgery or something. Yeah, like, even that, though, he hurt his knee running and getting caught in a drainage ditch in, you know, in Yankee Stadium. And that's what they always said. He hurt his knee. It wasn't like, you know, now they would say ACL, but yeah. But yes, and he played the rest of his career like that and then just decided he would have to drink and play a bunch of day games. So, you know, nothing like closing the Copa until 2 in the morning and being at Yankee Stadium at 10 for the game the next day, just still drunk off your ass, ready to go, hitting 565 home runs.
Yeah, wild. I mean, sometimes I would rather my players just did whatever they had to do rather than take 12, 15 months off. But, I mean, I don't think it's better for your health. So now that technology is better, they could actually fix that shit. Back then it was like, yeah, you could fix it. But, I mean, sports is definitely not on the – you can't play sports again. So it was like, yeah, well, what do you think you could do?
Budweiser. Budweiser and Marlboro Reds, and I'll be fine.
Yeah. So anyway, we get the Decapitator and then another one off the ropes. The second one was rougher than the first one. And then Barr just gets hit with tubes a bunch, like for a while. Like they just fucking hit him all sorts of ways with tubes. And then you get the pumpkin on Barr, which I think when he dropped that thing on his stomach, that probably hurt a lot.
Yeah, you could see Wife Beater, like, you know, it's one of those where you can see the thought bubble over a guy's head. And he's like,
yeah.
If I slam this thing down, I might kill this fucker. Like, I'm just going to let it drop.
Yeah.
And you could tell it wasn't light because right. It kept rolling off him. And then Hatred comes over and you can see Hatred at first, like, go like he's going to pick it up like it's light. And then he's like, oh, shit, I actually got to get, like, underneath this.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know how full it looked like it was carved, but again, I don't know how heavy it was, but yeah, that whole thing didn't look fun. And then to turn the chair sideways to put it through the pumpkin.
You know, it's, I mean, because the pumpkin, like you said, I really think it had some good weight to it. And I think that thought bubble was he walked around the top of Barr and
yeah.
My thought was like, there's no way he drops this on his head. He's fucking dead. And that's the way he died. Not the way I thought. And yeah. This is the end of him right here. If he drops it on his head at all, because it's just too fucking big. It's not one of those things like, oh, that's some badass shit. Like, no, like it's going to fucking crush your skull, I think. So, yeah. Or at least a lot of bones in your skull. So, you know, as he walks around, I'm like, all right. And then, like you said, he kind of lets it go. That doesn't really give the full effect. So now he wants to hit it with a chair because that's a Wife Beater thing, is just put whatever object on top of the guy and just smash it. But when he calls for the chair, the first chair he gets is a plastic one. And I saw right off the bat, I'm like, again, I'm giving credit to this pumpkin. I don't think that's going to do it. And sure enough, his first shot, pumpkin stays where it should, but the first shot doesn't do it, you know? So now he's on searching for another thing, and the pumpkin's fucking all over the place. So now, you know, it comes down to Nate's has to hold it there while he hits it, and that's what works. And I think by that point, he was just frustrated, and he was like, no way am I going to hit this thing and it not break. I'm going to slice this fucking thing with the chair. And that's what he went with.
And Z-Barr sells the hell out of it, and I'm not sure how much of it was a sell because, again, I don't know that you can determine how much swing force you need sideways with the chair to just get through the pumpkin but not actually fucking crush Z-Barr's lower spine there.
Yeah. They figured it out, I guess, because, again, that was not the time he passed. So, we get Flash. Flash is back now. We get Flash to a cutter to the barbed wire board on the outside to Beater, and that shit looked rough. I mean, it just looked like a rough landing overall.
Yeah, the board didn't break. It just kind of slid out of the way, and They went down hard there. That was on that barbed wire bridge. And then Z-Bar looking like Bret Hart with the perfect Russian leg sweep.
Yeah. I like Max Smack yelling at him. Those aren't for you. He starts grabbing. He grabs a light tube out of the box, and Max Smack's just yelling at him like he's a child. Those aren't for you. And he yelled it at him twice. And literally, when he got to the other side of the ring, he handed the light tube to fucking Adam Flash as if it wasn't really for him. So yeah. Like, White Peter's right down there below him. He could really reach down and whack him if he wanted to. And I don't know if that got into his head that he's being yelled at, that that's not for him, you know, in gimmick. But I just thought it was funny, the sequence of events, you know, with him grabbing it and being, like, scolded and then handing the light tube to somebody else to do it.
Yeah, and Flash hits White Peter in the stomach with the light tube. Again, shots you don't see all that often.
Right.
Z-Bar with that perfect springing moonsault. I know he's a much bigger gentleman, but everybody gives what the hell is his name? The Fatu. Fuck, I suck with names, Jay. What's the Fatu that just got to the WWE now? The crazy
Jacob.
One. Jacob. Yeah. Right. Everybody goes nuts when Jacob hits it, but here's Z-Bar again, 20 years earlier, hitting it like it's nothing.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I definitely give him a lot of credit for that, especially in this instance where the ring's full of glass, and that's not even really his thing. And you got to figure, even if, you know, his knee pads catch a lot of it and boots or whatever, and he gets, you know, kind of out of the way of it, even the glass that's in the ring's got to jump up at you when you make impact like that. So it's just a dangerous thing to be doing in a ring full of glass, and he does it without fear. So, you know, this whole match, I think he really went into it knowing that he wanted to accomplish this death match at least once. You know, he wanted to make this something that he could scratch off of his bucket list. And I think he accomplished that heavily. I think he went all in on this. He didn't hesitate on any of the stuff that he was going to take. He wasn't the guy that took the least punishment. If anything, he might have took the most.
The most, yeah.
Yeah. You know, we get the log cabin in. Beater hits that spine buster thing through the cabin. I always loved log cabins. It was just such an extreme use of light tubes. There were just so many in one spot. It was such an investment. You know what I mean? It's like you can only have so many of those in a show. You know, even if there was a lot of light tubes, what were you going to use a log cabin for? What match would that be for? What spot is that for? It was always usually something planned special. They were going to put a little bit more into it than, you know, just a table spot or just a pane of glass spot.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that's where it looked like Danny Rose cut his hand.
Mm-hmm.
As he goes through it on the spine buster. This was good, but could have been better because it did almost look, and I think in hindsight, they shouldn't have went with the setup of the tornado DDT because that looked a little bit off. Because I wasn't sure at first if he got the DDT and White Peter just held up, as you should, because you probably shouldn't go head first through tons of light tubes. But then it turned out to be the spine buster. And, you know, Rose immediately kind of rolls out and is looking at his hand. We don't see exactly what goes on until Z-Bar again with the flip onto both White Peter and Hatred off the top rope out to the outside.
Yeah, again, he's done a lot already, and that dive to the outside, just fearless, and he hits it really well. I mean, just great stuff. But yeah, I mean, the spinebuster, man, I mean, you got to think about it with some of these guys. Can you imagine that amount of glass that is like, yep, we're going through that, and that's not even really your thing, but you're going to do it for this match for whatever rhyme or reason that you decided to? But just the nervousness going into that one little last sequence after this thing that you've been thinking about for however long it's been since you agreed to it. You know what I mean? Like, it's got to be really nerve-wracking. Probably, like, easy spots are a lot harder to pull off even in that instance, right?
I would think so. And listen, you know, in real life here, these guys, they're not – this isn't their only job, most of them, hopefully all
right.
of them. You know, no. they're doing well. something. And –
You do
they're
hope.
Doing You would hope, yeah. Well, that and bank robbing, it seems to be the two jobs of CZW. But no, these guys are doing something. I mean, not every one of them is a construction worker or whatever. You know, I don't know what Danny Rose does on the side, but now he's got a hole in his hand. And, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, I did a wrestling match on Saturday, and, you know, you're a little beat up on Monday at work. But it's another thing to have, you know, major cuts all over you if you're going into even a – you know, just a job with other people there, right? Like,
oh yeah. But yeah, so, I think who was talking about that? I want to say Mondo was talking about that it's really difficult to, you know, go and train in a gym, like a normal gym.
Yeah.
You know, if you've been doing a lot of death matches and this and that, and then, you know, you start working up a sweat, you're going to start bleeding through your shirt with whatever recent cuts you've had. So now you're not okay in public to just be bleeding through your shirt at the gym. So it kind of makes it where you need to find somewhere to train where it's okay to just have that going on. So yeah, it's got to be a hard life to live if that's you know, where you're just going to work into your schedule, especially, you know, randomly.
Yeah, you know, the lunk alarm's definitely going off if you're bleeding as you get on the machine at Planet Fitness.
Fuck yeah. They don't want you yelling. They damn sure don't want you bleeding profusely through your shirt from like
and just
18 different spots. Like, yo, I don't know what the fuck stigmata is going on with this motherfucker here, but
yeah. And even somebody that's into it, if I'm working out at the same gym, I don't want dude bleeding all over. It's one thing, like we've talked about,
right?
And you do your style, I do more of the powerlifting style. So yeah, bloody hands is a thing, right? But anybody that has that happen, you know, if you're doing deadlifts and you tear or whatever, you know, you immediately go and clean the bar off and patch it up. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't just continue going and put the bar back on the rack, right? But if you're bleeding out from your back and your shirt's all bloody, like, yeah, people are going to look and be like, bro, what the fuck's wrong with you?
Yeah, it's wild.
You know, it's
or your forehead, you know, your forehead opens up while you're fucking, you know, just like, it's just not a good look.
No. And yeah, it's again, you know, the gyms, the style of gyms I go to. Yeah. You definitely get the bloody hands or even, you know, I've seen people bleed from their nose, from lifting and different stuff. You know, it's a part of it, but there's precautions that they still take afterwards. Like nobody's out there just lifting with a gashed like up hand,
dealing with lots of blood. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's a part of it, you know, it might happen, but there, like you said, there's protocols, right? Like you're so I can't imagine like these guys, to your point of, you know, just sitting there, oh, let me hit a set of 10 on the bench press. And their forehead's busted open all of a sudden. And they're just like, no, I'm just going to finish my workout like this. Okay, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. It's rough. So yeah, Flash gets whipped through a table on the outside. Wife beater hits that suplex on Flash through the barbed wire board on chairs. And then light cabin number two comes in.
Yeah, and Z-Bar goes up top. Rose is, you know, holding the thing because he thinks Z-Bar is going to get it. Then he moves at the last second to go play to the crowd. And Hatred hits him with a low blow and a push-off.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure if he thought it was going to be more of like a spine buster. You know, he does that sky-high spine buster. But again, I'm not going to you know, criticize the guy who had to fall through a log cabin that doesn't do this shit, you know, and hey, you should have jumped a little higher on that. So it looked better. Like, fuck you. I don't, you know, he's a monster for doing that shit, especially outside of his element. And, again, you know, that was checked off of his list that day for sure. Probably to me, the best match that I've seen Bar in historically, unless I'm forgetting something, but I just think that he went above and beyond to show that he could kind of live in that realm, at least for that day.
Yeah, he earned his money that show. I thought he did a great job. Again, to your point, I don't know if he was supposed to get some air, but he does it, and that's okay. And that, you know, I guess we'll get to Radio Shack gets on the mic and talks about come to the next show. But before that, I didn't like that they kept throwing shit at Z-Bar. Like, I get it that that's his normal funky thing, but there's, you know, to me, I wish those guys would have given him a little bit of, like, credit for that and just left him alone at the end. But maybe that's the nice guy in me.
Yeah, maybe. They definitely kept the gimmick going. They kept him being the shithead that was in the death match, and they launched some shit at him. And, you know, Peter was done with it. You know, he walked out of the ring. He was done with it. And then Max starts to make the announcement. And he starts saying that, you know, they got a big announcement to make at the next show and you really need to be there. And like, for whatever reason, that just prompted Wifebeater to come back into the ring and beat Barr up more and throw the fucking pumpkin at him again. And yeah. I mean, it was just like, man, whatever he said just fucking really lit him up again, because he came flying back in like, on a second thought, I wasn't done. I'm not just going to stand here while you talk.
Yeah, the one I really didn't like, and I don't know who threw it, and look, this is before we know the Nick Gage situation or even the Hoodfoot situation and some of the other things we've seen, but they took the other waffle or light cabin and they threw it at him from the other side of the ring, and I'm like, that dude, that could have fucked him up. You know, like, why are we doing that? That's the one where I'm like, oh, I wish they didn't do that. I thought that was shitty.
Yeah, I know accuracy could be dicey, but I did see that the way that he was kind of laying, had his legs up, you know, and his legs being covered, you know, with the pants, as long as you threw whatever you were tossing at him, like in his leg boot area, it wasn't going to really do a lot of damage. But yeah, you never know what's going to fall down, how the glass is going to turn in the air. It's not a flawless, you know, scenario, but I know at least what they were going for was throw some shit at his legs. It wasn't really like they were, you know, splashing him in the head with it. You know, they were thrown in his direction, dangerous enough for sure. But yeah, I think that was at least their point.
Yeah. And I get that's the gimmick, especially on Hatred, right? But again, you know, to me, it's that working relationship that you have to have with people. Dude did a lot of stuff that I'm sure, to your point, probably a bucket list thing, but I'm sure he was like, okay, I got through that shit. Everything's still here. Everything that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, or whatever you're saying. And then all of a sudden you have, God damn it. Like, are we not done with this? Right. And you can't really do anything but later.
Yeah.
Until a pumpkin hits you in the head.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's that. That's the, Sanctioned in Blood show from Delaware. And, the next one we will be at will be the, Beyond the Barrier show back in Viking Hall. That'll be another big one. Long show. I noticed that one's got a little bit more length to it than actually the Cage of Death that we have coming up. So for the rest of the year, I think this is the longest show we have coming. Even if it's just by a couple minutes, it just beats out the other shows lengthwise, 338 or whatever it might be. So yeah, we got a big one coming up here, and then, you know, we're back to Delaware for one more before Night of Infamy.
Yeah.
Which is the prelude to Cage of Death.
Gotcha. So Go ahead.
No, that's all I'm saying. It's just the prelude to Cage of Death. So it's like, we got this and then we got that. And it's just a lot of big things.
Yeah. Interested to see why the next show is as long as it is. Hopefully it's a good one. For next episode, you know, with it being a longer one, I don't know if we'll get to it, but we do have to go back and check what ROH and XPW were doing in this general time frame as well.
For sure, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And see where we're at. And again, if you want to go find Messiah's thumb, the case is still open.
Yeah, like I said, the following show that we have is another Delaware show, so we might have a little bit more time to just kind of fill in some extra stuff because, you know, that one's not going to have quite as much content, where some of those, you know, long shows were squeezing in right under the 2-hour mark. So we have a little extra time, I think, on those.
You
know, one thing I noticed, you know, some of this stuff, because, you know, we're using Cage Match pretty often, you know, cagematch.com or net.net, I should say. We're using it pretty often for index for different shows and things and lineups and things like that. I know I am. And, I had looked up, for whatever reason, I had looked up Donnie B, and it bothered me a little bit. Donnie B. Remember, we've talked about Donnie B briefly, right?
Maybe.
Yeah. One of the founders of the Backseat Boys. And, so you had asked me, you know, what do I think of Donnie B? And I said, yeah, he's fine. And, you know, I said he was one of the founders of Backseat Boys. And I kind of just said it like that, but when I read this, it sucks because, like, I just know that this guy has done a lot more than this. Like, so, like, you know, some of this, we might start to have to, you know, create, like, I think I might create an account, you know, for the show and maybe give some of these guys credit that aren't getting credit. I don't know when else Donnie B is going to come up again, so I figure I would just weave it into one of our shorter shows. But, so there's only 5 comments on here because it just has comments, like, on what people think of this person.
Okay.
And only 5 comments, all of them pertain to them burying his commentary on Ring of Honor shows. So I guess he was commentary on Ring of Honor shows and didn't do too well, or at least was very unpopular with the fans. But I thought, like, if this is the only summary of what we're going to say, here's Donnie B's page and this is what he's done or whatever, and that's all we have is 5 guys burying him for commentary on Ring of Honor, I think that's a little unfair, you know? You know, his early accomplishments, you know, just to say, like, as far as the Backseat Boys stuff goes, I don't know the guy's personal history or, you know, full accomplishments or Wikipedia or any of that bullshit. I'm not the deep guy, dive guy on the show, really, you know? You know, he was one of the co-founders of the Backseat Boys. I mean, that's enough to at least put that right up ahead of everything. So you got to give him credit for that, number one. But what he was doing with Big Buck Promotions, which then turned into Phoenix Championship Wrestling, was what led me to CZW. It led me to knowing that Trent Acid and Rick Blade and Johnny Cashmere and Nick Burke existed, and pushed me to going to Sewell to start watching CZW. This show wouldn't have existed technically if it wasn't for Donnie B's shows showing me the talent that made me want to see more of that type of talent. Donnie B not only brought in the Backseats and Blade and those guys that we know of, he was the first place that I ever saw that booked Samoa Joe, that booked Christopher Daniels. He was booking Christopher Daniels when Christopher Daniels had a blonde hair. So that shows you how fucking long ago that was. Hair and blonde, bleach blonde hair, like, you know, like Sting haircut, old school Sting haircut, like that kind of shit going on. Like, he was bringing in a ton of fucking talent. Yeah, his brother's Supernova and all that, you know, so obviously there's his accomplishments. But I'm just saying, for who Donnie B is and what he did to at least launch other bigger things. You know, Phoenix Championship Wrestling never became a bigger contender, wound up going away after CZW got bigger, Ring of Honor showed up, you know, and then he tried to add himself to the Ring of Honor product. He was never a John Zandig fan, so they never got along. But everything being considered, as one of the guys on the East Coast bringing these names in, I got to give him credit for what he did, and especially what he did to lead me to this point, to watching all of these other things that I enjoyed far more than the product that what he was putting out. But again, if not for this wouldn't have been, you know. So I just want to put out credit where credit is due in some things like that. And like I said, I think maybe we got to, you know, find a way to contribute to, and by all means, listeners, as we're talking about these guys and you're remembering, hey, like, yeah, that guy was fucking great, go log on Cage Match and see what the people are saying about him, and double down and let this you know, remembrance of all of these guys and what they've contributed to indie wrestling on the Northeast scene, you know, let our revisiting all of this boost these guys in the Cage Match world. Because, I mean, for what it is, it's just a website, but it's also kind of the place where you would refer to what is this, what is that. So let's let these guys, you know, get some respect, at least in that avenue.
Yeah, I just went on there and, 5 comments, 4 of them, 1-star, 1 3-star. And it's all about the same thing. Like you said, it's commentating and that he doesn't know anything about wrestling because he's inventing move names all the time, which I kind of thought that's what wrestling announcers do. Maybe not so much invent them, but take what the wrestler tells them the move name is.
Also, by the way, maybe ad-libbing when there's a lot of innovation and you're trying to do it on the fly. But again, yeah, be on the fucking internet instead.
Yeah, one of the things that I tell people, and I have told people, because you hear this about, like, baseball announcers, and Jay, you know, I'm a huge baseball guy. You know, mm-hmm. put your little voice memo thing on and do play-by-play for an inning. You know, do play-by-play for a match and then hear yourself. See how you go. See how good you are. This is not easy stuff. And You know, especially wrestling, where it's super fast motion and different things. And, you know, like I said before, on the light tube, I didn't know who took the brunt of it at first until I seen Danny Rose roll out of the ring and wife beater stand up, because sometimes it's hard to see. There was a match, a move earlier in the match with Sanjay Dutt and Ruckus, and Chris Cash, where they kind of double teamed, but Cash was able to reverse it. And you see Sanjay hit the mat and stand up and then hit the, you know, kind of flop again, because I think he was a little confused on who hit the move. And that's the guy that's in the match, right? So, you know, it's not the right thing to do to just crush people on something that's not easy to do. Play-by-play on wrestling is not easy. I think the only other thing that I would say is harder on play-by-play is radio play-by-play for hockey.
Yeah, I don't know how you fill that time with 3 points for a whole fucking game if you're lucky. Like, I had no fucking idea. I can't do hockey, man. I'm not with it. But, yeah, I mean, the other thing I'll say about Donnie B, too, because, like, you know, and I know it doesn't really factor into his cage match rankings or anything, but I guess it hits a little bit home, too, because he lives in the town that I live in. So I know what he does for his community. I know he raises, you know, food for the food bank around Halloween. He does, like, these fundraisers and stuff. I know I see him personally all the time at his kids' sports games, you know, whether his daughter's cheerleading or on the, you know, field hockey team with my daughter. So, like, I see this guy regularly being part of his child's lives and hosting things and, you know, doing things for the community that you'd be like, no, this is a good fucking guy. So you'll get some shitheads on Cage Match that are just hailed because of, like, the death match bump they've taken twice and, you know, some shack somewhere for five people, but, you know, Donnie B's getting buried on here for commentary he did in 2002. You know what I mean? I just think it was a little unfair the way he was handled in that comments there. And again, I guess it's just what's submitted, you know? So I very much encourage people to just go in there and just give a fucking shout out for the people you cared about or you think contributed something to your entertainment in indie wrestling, whoever it is. I'm not telling you who to type about, but I'm pretty sure that they could use your good comments and things like that in right there with their profile. So whoever looks it up gets something.
The last thing I'll say, Jay, is if you look at all the comments, they're from 2023 and then one from November of 2022. And with that being said, this is all the AEW fans from today that started watching when Tony bought it and put it on whatever it's on now. So it's not even the folks that were watching back then. So if you're going to, you know, call out commentary and you're an AEW fan that has Excalibur who botches, just yells out Spanish words all the time or Japanese words, half the time gets them wrong, and Tony Schiavone, who has been napping for the entire run of AEW he's been on, and then get to sit here and take shots at anybody else, take a look at the product that you clearly like way too much as you're commenting on, you know, 20-year-old wrestling and the announcer from there.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild. And I, you know, I was like, oh, fuck. And I was just like, because we just had, you know, a lot of talking about Justice Payne and people's thoughts on him. So I was like, let me just look him up. And it was mixed, but there was some in there that were just, you know, garbage comments. And it's just like, man, there was a guy in there that really got it, you know, and he said, like, what a major player in CZW and how important Justice Payne was. And I'm like, thankfully somebody got it. Because, again, once these guys are gone and you know they contributed so much, but you get this weird, skewed just view on the guy because they heard a shoot interview from someone they liked and they believe in whatever he said, so fuck the guy's whole career. And you're like, yeah, but no, like, because you can't even have CZW if you take that guy out of the picture. So again, it meant something to me. And I mean, maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's some of the new TV audience getting their eyes on the indie product, and now revisionist history, they're going back and labeling it this way. So if that's the case, the old school indie fans need to take back what it was and at least go and represent themselves on this page here and just show that, you know, these guys were better than whatever glimpses or clips that these guys have seen.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree 1,000% with it. You know, interact, get on there. Yeah, just
major plug for cagematch.net just there. But I just felt like, because of it representing whatever kind of search you do on a wrestler these days, it should have a better landing spot for some of these guys' names and how they're represented as like their summary.
Agreed.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we are off to Breaking the Barrier back at the arena on the next show. It's going to take a little bit to get through this one because, again, 3 hours, so it will not be tomorrow. But three and a half and whatever extra. But we will definitely get at this thing and get back at you when we are done with this.
See you.
Hey.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.